The gate flew open, leaving a contrail of smoke in its wake as it loudly crashed against the brick wall. The companions waited to see if there was any response to the noise, but only the faint noises from the jungle below could be heard, along with the ever-present sheet lightning and thunder from the tortured sky. Leaning against the wall, Jack stayed on guard while the others rolled the bikes through the gate. Dean went to the kiosk and raised the striped wooden beam blocking the entrance. As the motorcycles rolled by, he noticed that inside the kiosk, skeletons were sprawled on a table covered with playing cards and matchsticks.
Lucky bastards never knew what hit them.
They attacking?
Not anymore.
On the street, something hidden in the weeds made a guttural noise and went still. Inside the ruins, skulking creatures retreated to the safety of the darkness, one of them consuming a squealing rat that was not long from dead.
Mayhap I should stay here and sound a guardiloo if there is trouble.
No, we stay together.
With Sig Sauer drawn, Ryan climbed on the Harley and pressed the ignition button. The bike purred into life.
Dean, close the gate. Bind it with some rope, a belt, whatever you got.
Done!
Under watchful blasters, the boy pulled out his bowie knife and cut away the power cable leading to the defunct motors for the gate, then used the insulated wiring to bind the entrance shut.
That'll hold!
As the boy climbed onto the saddle with his father, Jack slid behind Doc, and they all rolled along the wide expanse of cracked tarmac for 100 feet before reaching the warehouse. The asphalt was badly damaged, stunted weeds growing in the cracks. Breaking to a halt for a brief consultation, Mildred served as the anchor with her rapid fire, while Ryan and Christy drove a wreck around the building. When they were gone from sight, JB went to the front door of the warehouse and studied the complex locking mechanism. Christy returned from around a corner and stopped next to the other bikes.
Nobody about.
A few moments later, Ryan appeared from the opposite side.
Loading dock in the rear, but the doors are bigger and look even stronger than the front.
Which are also locked. Electronic keypad, palm reader, and ID card necessary. Gonna take a lot more C4 than I have to open that damn slab of steel.
And the rear doors are even stronger?
Like a fucking bank vault.
Any windows?
None.
So let's try Occam's razor. Maybe the keys are in the main office.
Worth a shot.
Leaving Doc to guard the bikes, the others took the pressurized lanterns and walked over to the small building. On point, Ryan found the screen door locked, but the inside door was held open with a rubber wedge. Rain blown in through the screen had destroyed the front room, the chairs and carpeting reduced to rags, the legs of a dark wooden table bleached gray. The lanterns were lit, and cutting a slit in the screen, Ryan released the latch holding the outer door in place and entered the dim building. Immediately he was assailed by the stench of dust and mildew, the smells as familiar to him as blood and cordite. Spreading out, the companions found nothing of interest in the waiting room and started along a short hallway. Side doors led to a file room, a bathroom, and finally to a large office with tarnished gold lettering stamped on the mahogany door. The name shown was Major Eric K. Thomas, commanding officer. Kicking the door open, Ryan immediately fired, and the sheet of paper fluttering off the desk jerked as the 9mm round punched through to slap into the wall. Entering the room, the Deathlands warrior picked up the spent brass from the floor.
What a waste, you fucking idiot.
Gray sunlight filtered through the grimy windows to poorly illuminate the CO's office. In the corner was a water cooler, streaked by mineral deposits on the inside. Next came a line of red leather chairs that had been badly nibbled by mice, the foamy cushions tufting out randomly. The walls were heavily decorated with framed diplomas and commendations, pictures of family and friends, each so badly tilted that a few were hanging sideways. Near a green metal file cabinet was a sofa blanketed in cobwebs, and a vid camera hung at the distant corner of the ceiling, where it could cover both the door and windows. The door to a private bathroom was ajar, and dominating the room was a tremendous oak desk, topped with a sheet of greenish glass. A skeleton was slumped over the desktop. Tiny bits of blue fiber and tarnished metal sticking to the collarbones seemed to imply that this was an officer, possibly the CO himself.
Damn, it stinks in here.
Wrinkling her nose, Mildred set the lantern on a convenient coffee table. Magazine covers showed smiling politicians, sleek cars, and anorexic women in tiny bikinis that ballooned over their bodies.
Smelled worse?
In Louisiana? I'm sure.
As with most offices, the key to the cabinet had been left in the lock, to be removed at the end of the day. But the end had come sooner than expected, and the files were completely accessible. The teenager found a dried-out bottle of scotch in the bottom drawer, along with a couple of Western novels, and a rat who'd made a nest by chewing the documents to shreds.
What the hell was that? And that.
Doc handled it, whatever it was.
Found the warehouse ID card. Same name as the base CO.
Keep it, son. Could come in handy.
At least it means we're on the right track.
Christie lifted a ring of keys into view and started going through them one at a time. The lock on the warehouse was large and shaped like an H, a Vichy or something like that. One of the few locks, JB said, nobody could trick or pick. He often joked that a sledgehammer was the best way through a Vichy. Not helping in the search, Ryan stayed where he was and continued to carefully study the room's furnishings. Something was out of place, but he just couldn't put a crosshair on what was wrong. Then he spotted it. Hung on the wall behind the desk was the classic, unfinished George Washington portrait. There was nothing obviously suspicious about the picture, and Ryan had to look twice before finally realizing it was the only thing hanging on the walls that was still perfectly plumb. This close to the volcano, the base had to have received thousands of mini-quakes from pressure vents over the decades.
There's a wall safe.
Ryan went around the desk and pushed the office chair of bones out of the way. The deceased commanding officer tumbled to the carpet and was kicked aside, but the bones rolled under the desk. Even in death, this bastard refused to relinquish his post. Running his fingers along the frame, Ryan thought the portrait was nailed in place until he touched a release switch on top and it swung away from the wall. Set into the concrete wall was the pebbled armored front of a small safe. It was regulation size, with the standard numbered dial and lever. Ryan stepped out of the way and let JB sweep it with his compass.
No mag fields. If it's boobied, I can probably bypass the trigger.
Maybe we shouldn't bother. Safes are usually cleaned out.
Not always.
JB pressed an ear to the steel door and closed his eyes to concentrate. Artfully, he rotated the dial twice to zero, then began slowly turning the dial, listening for clicks. Less than a minute later, he twisted the handle and began pulling out wads of papers marked top secret.
No warehouse manifests.
Triumphantly, the armorer withdrew a small wooden box. Forcing the lock with a knife blade, he sprung it open to show red velvet lining with irregular indentations, spaces for a dozen keys, but only four were in place.
Front gate, main office, fuel pump, loading dock.
Bingo!
Leaving the office, the companion started toward the last warehouse. Blaster in hand, Doc waved in passing, a shoe resting on top of a crow, feathers strewed across the parking lot. Coming from the jungle, Ryan could hear a mixture of animal noises and glanced at his rad counter. The needle was near the red line and climbing steadily as they approached the rear of the warehouse. Any higher and they'd have to cancel the wreck or risk getting rad poisoning. Staying as close to the brick building as possible, they crept along the loading dock, the concrete ramp extending from the warehouse at shoulder height. On the dock were three rust-streaked metal doors and a wire fence closing off the dock itself. To the left was a set of stairs leading from the parking lot to a door alongside the dock, but those were also enclosed by wire fencing, this time topped by what was probably once concertina wire. Only the endless coil of razor blades had disintegrated from exposure, and nothing remained but some reddish-brown stains on the fencing. JB checked the rad counter on his lapel.
Damn, it's hot here.
Which is why we're not going to waste time with lockpicks.
The padlock blew apart, and the man hastily dragged off the chain holding the gate closed. Rushing into the enclosed area, everybody climbed the stairs and breathed a sigh of relief as the rad counters eased their ominous clicking. The warehouse had to be at the very edge of the rad field, mere yards making the difference between lethal and livable. At the top of the stairs, JB fired the Uzi and shattered the door lock.
Damn!
Impressive. The damn thing still worked after 100 years.
Just a fluke.
JB pushed open the door with his rapid fire. Just like in the city, the companions held their breath while out poured a rush of dry, lifeless wind. Impatiently, they waited until fresh air had a chance to circulate inside. Then, Ryan gave it an extra couple minutes just to be sure.